Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Tantra's Mantra, where we go behind and beyond the tech news headlines. I'm your host Prakash Sangam, founder and principal at Tantra Analyst. Today, for the first time, we are talking about AMD on this show. No, we are not talking about Copilot Plus PCs. We have done enough of that in the past. But we're talking about even more interesting and more technical subject, but a little bit less hyped, I would say. And it's about FPGAs. The market has gone through lots of changes in the last few years, in the FPGA market, that is, primarily because of acquisitions. FPGAs are widely used in many use cases across industries, including IoT, specifically industrial IoT, cloud, data center, automotive, telecom, you name it. As many of you might know or remember, only a few years ago, the market was dominated by two players, Altera and Xilinx. Then in 2015, Intel acquired Altera and followed that by in 2022, AMD acquired Xilinx. So the Altera Xilinx became part of the legendary Intel versus AMD rivalry. This also gave an opportunity for smaller players like Lattice Semiconductor to thrive in specific niche market opportunities and so on. Anyway, today we'll focus more on AMD's acquisition of Xilinx, how that has fared, how is the collaboration coming along, of course the cross leverage there as well, and what are the challenges and opportunities and so on. And to discuss all that, we are privileged to have Dr. Salil Rajay with us today. He is the SVP and GM for Adaptive and Embedded Computing Group at AMD and a Xilinx veteran. Salil, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Prakash. Thank you for the introduction.
Very well. As I mentioned, you are a Xilinx veteran and spent quite a few years there, right? Could you tell us about your journey at Xilinx and now at AMD?
Yeah, so I have been at Xilinx and now AMD for about 20 years and joined Xilinx through an acquisition of my own company. I was doing an FPGA EDA company before I joined Xilinx and Xilinx acquired us. So, you know, I at Xilinx, you know, I've been focused for many years. I was focused on software engineering. I ran the software and IP development group. And then I started to focus on the data center market and trying to get Xilinx FPGAs into data center applications and acceleration. And then recently, I started to manage all of the Xilinx business and engineering and also the x86 embedded business. So Adaptive and Embedded Computing Group, basically the combination of Xilinx as well as the x86 embedded CPUs.
Okay. So, as you mentioned, the AECG, the Adaptive and Embedded Computing Group, is relatively new to AMD, right? Was it formed after Xilinx acquisition or was it there before and Xilinx went into it?
It is a fairly new group. It got formed at the close of the acquisition in 2022. You know, it's a container for Xilinx and embedded x86, right?
Okay. And what are the charter of the group? What are the markets you serve?
Yeah, so the main mission of our group is to be the leader in adaptive and embedded computing. So we can empower our customers and making sure that they can deliver differentiated solutions themselves.
Okay.
So we are in about 10 different markets. You know, we are in automotive, aerospace, defense, industrial vision, healthcare, all the way to wired and wireless communications. We handle about 30 different applications within these markets. You know, we have a pretty sizable reach with customers. I would say between direct and indirect customers that we work with, we have about 7,000 customers. You know, and many of them, you know, we have very deep relationships with. And you'll find our products everywhere, right? You'll find our products in cloud. You'll find them in edge. You'll find them at endpoints and everything in between, right? You'll find, you know, our FPGAs and adaptive SoCs, which are the latest sort of the generation of our products. Find them in space. You'll find them in robotic arms. You'll find them on, you know, doing ADAS applications on automotive, right? So it's a pretty broad range of applications that we work with.
Indeed. And talking about this in a change in dynamics, market dynamics with Intel taking Altera, you guys going into AMD. So how has the competitive situation or the dynamics changed? Is it the same that you were before now you know, competing as Intel and AMD, or has it been different last few years after the acquisition?
Yeah, so I think, after Intel acquired mm-hmm. Altera, it was in 2015, like you said, we have been expanding our market share quite mm-hmm. a bit, right? So I think, you know, we were sort of back then, we were neck and neck with Altera in terms of market share. Uh-huh. And over these last few years, we have expanded our market share, you know, and gained significant market share against Altera and other FPGA vendors, right? So we are, you know, by far the leader now in FPGA business. Mm-hmm. We have introduced products that are not just mere FPGAs, right? So we used to mostly programmable logic, and now our products are, you know, complex SoCs, right? They have ARM-based processing subsystems.
Correct.
We have, you know, hardened cores in video. We have RF integrated within our SoCs. Mm-hmm. So we call them now adaptive SoCs, right? So and with that change, with that transformation, our market has expanded. So the SAM has expanded to go beyond just the pure PLD market mm-hmm. That we used to reside in.
Okay.
And in those new markets, we really compete with other semiconductor companies, right? You know, be it, let's say, NXP, TI, Marvell, right? Other standard semiconductor companies, right? And we don't really see competition from Altera in those markets with adaptive SoCs.
Yeah.
And so we feel pretty good about the transformation that we have made over these last years.
Cool. So as you mentioned, I think one of the key objectives of the acquisition itself was cross-leverage product portfolios, right? Getting more compute into Xilinx products and more FPGAs into AMD's SoCs, basically making more SoCs rather than just discrete chips. So looks like that's been going pretty good.
Yes, absolutely. We have a tremendous portfolio now at AMD, right? I would say that we are one of the only companies to have this broad a portfolio of products mm-hmm. and IP. We have CPUs, we have GPUs, we have networking processing units, we have AI engines and the neural processing units, mm-hmm. and we have the programmable logic, of course, we have ARM processors, as well as x86 processors. And with that broad portfolio, we can address a lot of our customer challenges. We are the only ones who can bring together all of these IPs into either a single device, or we can have multiple products sitting on the same board, solving our customers' challenges. So it feels extremely exciting to us, and our customers drawing us in. There have been conversations where customers have been wanting to have somebody of our scale with that level of portfolio. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the problems are getting harder. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, we are one of the few ones who can solve these problems for our customers.
Cool. So one of the statements AMD had made during acquisition was, you know, keep the Xilinx portfolio intact and grow it. And how has that been? Was there any culling of any product lines, or it's mostly continuing and complementing that with the processors and, you know, making them SoCs?
If anything, you know, the product portfolio wasn't stronger after the acquisition.
Yeah.
Lisa Su, our CEO, has done a phenomenal job in integrating Xilinx into AMD. Mm-hmm. Unlike many other acquisitions where you embrace the acquisition to the point where you crush them, mm-hmm. I think what Lisa has done is it kept us fairly autonomous. Uh-huh. But at the same time, leverage product portfolio where we can leverage, and leverage the synergies in development where we can leverage, right? Yeah. If I had to look at the product roadmap now versus what we mm-hmm. had just before acquisition, it's much stronger.
Okay.
We have more, range of products that we have put in the roadmap. We have low-end products. We just introduced Spartan Ultra Scale Plus FPGAs to go after the mm-hmm. very low end of our portfolio. Mm-hmm. We have introduced some mid-range products. We have also launched AI-based products mm-hmm. And our Versal Generation 2 products have been launched as well in the last couple of years, right? So, we have a very broad spectrum of products now, going from the very low end to the very high end, and have included AI in our portfolio as well.
Cool. Yeah.
So if anything, the product is we are very well positioned now across all the different markets that we serve.
Yeah, cool. So for integrating and cross leveraging, right? So Xilinx has been a ARM shop using ARM CPU cores, whereas obviously AMD is x86. How challenging was this integrating these on a SoC? What are some of the challenges you faced? How did you solve them?
So Prakash, we don't consider ourselves as either an ARM or an x86 uh-huh. house, even though AMD has made revenue for the many years with x86 processors. Yeah. We think about ourselves as high performance computing company.
Okay.
We use the right instruction set, the ISRs, for the right markets and applications. Mm-hmm. Yes, Xilinx has typically used ARM processors within our SoC.
Yeah.
And because those applications and those markets we serve, demand us to have ARM processors.
Yeah.
And the software application stack that people need are mostly based on ARM. So, and we continue to serve the ARM market. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we have applications where, in the embedded business itself, we have applications where we need x86. So if you think about infotainment, mm-hmm. in-car, yeah. Entertainment, mm-hmm. people want x86 because it gives them performance.
Yeah.
And headroom for doing, say, AAA gaming, mm-hmm. right? And we do enable that. We have products that combine x86 chips with our adaptive SoC chips, and we can do end-to-end application mm-hmm. in these markets. We have autonomous vehicle. We use both x86 and ARM-based SoCs mm-hmm. For security appliances and wired communications. A lot of times we see x86 and our adaptive SoCs work together.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many applications where we can combine CPUs of different types.
Okay.
We are also focused on RISC-V, by the way. So it's not just x86 and ARM.
Okay.
We just introduced MicroBlaze-V, which is a soft core RISC-V based processor.
Uh-huh.
So that sits in our programmable logic.
Uh-huh.
Customers and applications that want a really low-end RISC-V processor, we service those as well. So we are pretty agnostic
uh-huh.
In terms of ISA. Our goal is to service the market and applications with the right processor that the market needs.
Okay, so interesting comment on RISC-V. How is that coming along? I mean, it was kind of experimental a few years ago, but this feud between Qualcomm and ARM seemed to have given it a lot of energy and almost a shot in the arm, right?
Yeah, RISC-V is definitely progressing well.
Uh-huh.
It is still in the lower end
yeah.
of the market.
Yeah.
I think RISC-V doesn't come with as much of the software stack as ARM does.
Yeah, and tools.
ARM definitely has a long history.
Yeah.
But we are starting to see traction for RISC-V.
Yeah.
We do see traction in the China market, and we do see for some applications where you don't need as much of the horsepower, open source RISC-V can work.
Okay. Also for geopolitical reasons, China has been a main area with a lot of traction. Yeah.
China is definitely a big target for RISC-V, yes.
Cool. Yeah. So in terms of integrating, how effective chiplets have been? Do you have chiplets based on your products that work with AMD or other x86 or other processors?
Yeah, chiplets are, for AMD, fundamental to how we design our products.
Yeah.
We at AMD, we introduced our CPUs through chiplets a long time before, mm-hmm. Anybody else jumped on the bandwagon. A lot of customer interest in chiplets or MI300A, MI300X products are fundamentally based on chiplets. The chiplet technology enables them to give the type of performance those applications demand.
Yeah.
In addition, the synergy between Xilinx and AMD has been phenomenal on this front as well. Xilinx also had a long history of chiplet-based approach.
Mm-hmm.
If you heard about SSIT, which is Stacked Silicon Interconnect Technology,
uh-huh.
That allowed Xilinx to create the largest FPGAs in the world.
Yeah.
And we have held that title for many generations. And that has to do with this SSIT technology.
Mm-hmm.
We have slices of FPGAs all stitched together,
mm.
and we use them in many applications, in wired applications, in emulation prototyping applications, some other test and measurement applications
mm-hmm.
use and use SSIT technology. We also continuing that forward with Versal Premium that uses HBM. So we connect HBM to our Versal products.
Okay.
Same technology, so that allows us to have very large memory bandwidth.
Yeah,
and we can service compute acceleration, for example, through that technology. Chiplets have been very good to AMD. We can also, through chiplets, we can drive a lot of IP leverage across the company. So you can imagine we can connect up multiple IPs that the company has through chiplets. We increase our compute capability that is not possible through monolithic devices.
Yeah.
And on top of that, now we are also focused on, you know, using our customers' IP and connecting them into our devices.
Yeah.
So that allows us to partner with our customers and bring their own IP into our portfolio.
Yeah, true. In terms of, you know, SoC is integrating multiple technologies, multiple partners. Chiplets have been a real key development, I think.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, talking about edge compute that you mentioned a little bit in terms of Versal and so on. So, that's where your latest Versal 2 announcements were as well. What are some of the challenges that you're seeing for edge compute platforms, and especially in embedded systems?
Yeah, so before I say talk about challenges, let me talk about some of the positives.
Okay, sure. Edge as such is the next frontier, right? So, you know, there is realization that a lot of things will happen edge. It's a large opportunity, but, you know, glad to hear your perspective on the opportunity for sure.
Yeah. So you know, absolutely, edge is the next frontier. Yeah. I think cloud has grown significantly, but, you know, a lot of the applications will move towards the edge.
Yeah.
It has many positives, right? And it does bring compute power closer to the source of data.
Yeah.
So some of the applications you can't really do in the cloud. You need low latency, real-time responsiveness.
Yeah.
And for that reason, you need to keep the compute closer to where the data resides.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when you do the compute at the edge, you lower the bandwidth that you need as you move data between cloud and edge.
Correct.
And the most important thing these days has to do with data security. Right? Mm-hmm. So if people, you know, would not want to move that data from the edge and the endpoint applications to the cloud. So you need to keep the compute closer to the data to make sure that the data is secure at the edge. So for a lot of those reasons, edge compute is becoming very popular. Yep. AI at the edge is also the next frontier. Right? So you can imagine a lot of these applications are starting to move into AI-based applications.
Okay.
So that's another inflection that is happening in the market.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, there are many challenges as well. Right? You know, you have to be very savvy about how you do some of these edge applications.
Yeah.
Some of the challenges had to do with power consumption. You know, at the edge, power is limited.
Yeah.
You had to worry about thermal envelope, make sure that you do the compute under the right power as well as thermal envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you have to be very efficient. Compute efficiency is paramount for our products there at the edge. Then real-time processing. So you have to have low latency, real-time capabilities so that, you know, if you can solve it, it's a big positive, but it's also a big challenge in how to do it under the power constraints.
Correct.
Scalability is another one. You can't just have a single product in a single market. You need to be able to produce products that cut across the different ranges of markets. You may need a low-end product for the cost-sensitive part of the market, or you may want to have a higher-end, larger compute product for the higher end of the market.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the reason scalability is important is because you want to preserve the software stack, right? You don't want to have different software stacks and redo all of those applications.
Correct.
As you move from the lower end of the market to the higher end of the market.
Yeah.
I think security, privacy, like I said, is a positive, but it's also a challenge. How do you keep the data local?
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep it secure? Make sure that there are enough mechanisms in there so that people cannot tamper with the data, cannot steal the data.
Yeah.
And that's another challenge.
Yep.
There are cost constraints, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of these edge applications are very cost sensitive.
Yeah.
And a lot of these edge applications, these are embedded applications. They have longevity requirements, right? If you're sending something to the space, you need to be able to live for 20, 30 years sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And you need to live in environments that are pretty harsh. You may have a cell phone tower in, you know, closer to Antarctica, yeah. Right?
Or the desert in Sahara. Yeah.
Or the desert in Sahara, exactly, right? So, so you need temperature ranges and, you know, so that your products can survive all that. So those are some of the big constraints and challenges at the edge.
Yeah, true. So how is your latest Versal Gen 2 solving them?
Versal Gen 2 products are very complex SoCs, mm-hmm. and they pack in a lot of processing power in a very small area.
Mm-hmm.
We are AMD's foundation in heterogeneous computing.
Yeah.
But we have many different heterogeneous computing elements within Versal Gen 2 product.
Yeah.
And you know, it's geared towards AI workloads as well. And these AI workloads have, you know, different stages of processing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just about AI inference, but it's also about some pre-processing that happens that handles data coming from cameras, radars, LIDARs.
Yeah.
Then there is AI inference, of course, which is, you know, where we deploy pre-trained AI models.
Yeah.
And then you have the post-processing stage where you are making decisions, right? You're either moving a robotic arm or applying brakes.
Yeah.
So Versal Gen 2 products handle all of these stages, the end-to-end application, pre-processing, inference, post-processing, all on a single device.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a whole host of processing capabilities within this Gen 2 product. We have CPUs,
mm-hmm.
We have ARM-based CPUs, mm-hmm. we have graphic processors, GPUs,
yeah.
we have programmable logic, we have AI engines, these are the neural processing units to do AI inference.
Yeah.
We have many video processing subsystems that are hardened,
mm-hmm.
we have ISPs that are hardened.
Mm-hmm.
So what we can do is we can apply the right processing subsystem to the right part of the application. So,
yeah.
you know, the entire end-to-end application can be accelerated with the Gen 2 products.
And
you know, we are also scalable. So, we have the smallest Versal Gen 2 product that can go after robotics, industrial robots, or even consumer robots,
mm-hmm.
All the way to very large, you know, ADAS applications. Right? So, mm-hmm. It scans the spectrum for different markets,
mm-hmm.
And you can scale up and down, you know, our products with the same software stack. So,
yeah.
so we are very scalable as well. So I would say the way we handle these applications, you know, if there are really three pillars, right? We have heterogeneous computing,
uh-huh.
Within our Versal Gen 2 products.
Mm-hmm.
We are very scalable,
mm-hmm.
and we are adaptable. A lot of these engines that I talked about are very adaptable. So as newer generations of compute applications, newer AI models get created,
mm-hmm.
The same device can adapt to those newer innovations.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of interesting things packed into Versal Gen 2.
Okay, cool. So when you announced, you talked about Subaru adopting it. It's been a couple of months now since the announcement. How is the traction? Anything that you can share publicly in terms of customers? What kind of use cases and applications you're seeing?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's still, I guess some time before we actually
start shipping it.
Take the product into production. Yeah. But we opened up product for, you know, early access.
Mm-hmm.
And the traction has been phenomenal after the Subaru announcement. Mm-hmm. And that was a more public announcement, but we have many, many other engagements with a whole host of customers right now.
Uh-huh.
Pipeline is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And we are working with these customers to deploy their application, their model with our software, right? So,
yeah.
We are working with automotive OEMs and tier ones already.
Mm-hmm.
We're also working with real-time video applications, smart camera applications.
Mm-hmm.
So the number of customers engaged with us is growing every day.
Oh, okay. Cool. I'm looking forward to seeing more, being public about it. So as I said, it's sampling in the first half of next year and GA towards the end of next year, right?
Yeah, I think GA in late 2025. That's exactly right.
Okay. Yeah. Isn't it very early? I mean, maybe it makes sense for automotives, but usually you don't announce chips this early, right? almost a year early.
As you move more and more into adaptive SoCs and you create more of these complex SoCs with so many different processing subsystems and the application complexity grows, we really need to engage with customers earlier and make sure that we can move their application, move their models into our product through software. Right? Mm-hmm. We don't need the silicon.
Right? Yeah.
You can truly simulate the entire application with our software.
Yeah.
And people do need that amount of time to be ready for when the silicon comes back. So you can actually, as our silicon goes GA in production, the customer's application can go production, almost at around the same time. Right. So we do need that amount of time to work with our customers. And not very atypical, actually, for these kind of complex SoCs.
Okay. And you did mention about chiplet architecture using HBM and other things. Do you have a chiplet version of Versal 2?
So Versal Gen 2 products are what we deployed with our customers and launched are right now monolithic.
Mm-hmm.
But there are plans and in place to ensure that we can use chiplets technology with some of our partners.
Okay.
We are a member of UCIe,
mm-hmm.
and we will create products with UCIe that will connect up to customers' IP.
Okay.
And those plans are definitely in place.
Yeah, especially the Prime series version of Versal 2, which doesn't have its own AI processor. I think that's ripe for getting a high power CPU as AI co-processor, using a chiplet architecture, right?
That's right. I mean, you can imagine, this area can explode, right, with the chiplet technology as well as with standardized interfaces. A lot of customers want to bring their own IP to us.
Yeah.
Typically, these are not AI accelerator IPs.
Okay.
They are some hardened IP of their own.
I see.
And we can connect to them through things like UCIe. When it comes to AI accelerators, we do have a very strong portfolio. We have GPUs that can do that, and we have the NPUs that are already deployed in our Ryzen processors that people can use. And so people look to us to have that AI accelerator.
Okay. And I mean, especially when you look at industrial sector, the use cases and the needs are so much varying, right? So I think that's where the adaptability and the ability to design a SoC based on what is exactly needed for that market with chiplets, I think it becomes very easy and flexible.
Absolutely. I think a chiplet opens up many possibilities. Yeah. But you mentioned adaptability, right? I think that's our core and foundation. Yeah. And there are a lot of applications where there's innovation going on at a rapid pace. And what you think you need today may not be what you need tomorrow.
Yeah.
And adaptability plays a huge role there. You can deploy your application with our current devices and continue to upgrade them through the life cycle of the product. Right? You can upgrade AI models. You can upgrade some of the sensors that you may need in the future. So that it gives you longevity. Right? It gives you confidence that what I'm deploying today may not become irrelevant tomorrow.
Correct. Yeah. And in terms of evolution, of course, Versal 2 has some time before it comes into market. In terms of evolution, what are some of the trajectories that you're looking at to take this even further?
So we are more and more focused on adaptable SoCs, which means that we will continue to focus on each of these applications and look at what types of processing subsystems we may need to harden within our SoC.
Uh-huh.
And these markets are starting to diverge, right? So aerospace and defense is very different from industrial, and it's very different from automotive.
Yeah.
In the past, our history has been that we used to create a broad range of pure programmable logic devices, and they used to be used across different applications.
Mm.
What we're noticing now is that because there's a divergence in markets and applications, we need to create products that are more focused on certain applications.
See.
So they'll become more and more application-specific, but adaptive SoCs. So you can get flexibility. within that application, you can upgrade within that application, but there will be more application specific as we move forward.
So very apt to the business unit name that you have, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. All right, this was a great discussion, Salil. Thank you very much for all the insights. I look forward to more updates on Versal 2, customer traction and commercial use cases and so on. Maybe we can have a follow-up discussion in 2025.
Thank you, Prakash. You know, it was great talking to you, and thank you for inviting us. You know, it's been an exciting journey for us at AMD. You know, we look forward to more products coming out, and you know, we look forward to talking to your audience with about them.
Sure. Best of luck with all of that, and thank you again for coming over to Tantra's Mantra.
Thank you.
So, folks, that's all we have for now. I hope you found this discussion informative and useful. If so, please hit like and subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you are listening this on. I'll be back soon with another episode, putting light on another interesting tech subject. Bye bye for now.